Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know nothing about that. All I know is that somebody is going to get their ass whooped over this thing.
I just love having that as my intro. I didn't pick it, but it's sort of apropos. Well, today is that most auspicious anniversary of September the 11th, and I kind of, just like every week, had sort of a long day, so I'm going to try to make this succinct. I'm going to try not to go off on too many tangents, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a rundown of this topic, because everybody's heard it covered from so many different angles, from a personal, a historical, an esoteric, mixed with like how they showed in films and did all those primers and comic books and all those things, and how they sort of tied that all together. But where my take on it comes from, I think, is a little bit different than just the pre-programming. I don't believe it was just a pre-programming thing. I think it was a combination. We'll get into some of the metaphysics, if we have time, of what the event actually meant and what people speculate that it meant. And, you know, just sort of, why does this adaptive thing keep popping up here? But, well, I don't know. Let's get started. Okay, so that year was almost 20 years ago now. So that was almost half my lifetime ago. And I remember that Thanksgiving, getting together with the family and having a discussion, one of the last times that we were all together, and getting together for Thanksgiving and talking about, obviously, that it had been just long enough to where it had sunk in, which I think was part of this ritual, was that people, they knew that people would be around the dinner tables discussing this so soon, right afterwards. And it was amazing now, looking back, how everyone parroted back the talking points and the structural failure talking points almost to a T. You know, they were like, those buildings, they were, you know, made to collapse, and they hadn't anticipated that. And I mean, but word for word, they were doing the whole parrot player game theory, you know, talking points to a T. And at the time, everyone says, I remember where I was. I remember where I was. I'm not going to tell you guys where I was. As a matter of fact, I'll give you a cool story. I know where Vanilla Ice was, because I ran into him outside the courthouse down in Broward just before the incident occurred. And he was really cool, and he talked for like 3 hours, and we didn't have cell phones then. I remember, because I had to go over to the payphone and ask him if he'd call my my girlfriend just to say hi, because we had started talking for so long. I actually saw a scar on his knee, and I said, I know how you got that scar. And I told him that he got it doing motocross. I might have told this story in a different show, but he was so amazed that I had known that, because I had read this little $1.99 autobiography back in like 1990 that I had, you know, grabbed when I went to the store with my mom. And I skimmed it and ran, you know, like read through it. And I had remembered that specifically, not knowing that I'd bump into the guy one day. And when I did that, I saw like his mind was blown, and hit, not to, that's a bad pun, but yeah. So that's where he was. So I'll give you an idea of where I was. So everybody always says, I know where I was on that day, and it looked like a movie. Well, of course it looked like a movie, because they did everything they could other than erect a sign or billboard to say, this is what we're going to do. From, well, let's get into the historical parts of what most people skim over. All right, first of all, 911 as a emergency number was chosen in 1968, and the first time that that was actually used, it was chosen by the FCC, and if you ask why the number was chosen, they won't tell you why. They'll just tell you that it was a short number and easy to remember. But people probably had rotary phones, so it probably wasn't the best number. It probably would have been quicker to have it all maybe one number, and that would have been easier to remember. So there's definitely an occult origin of that number. No matter what tradition that occult number derives from, there's definitely an occult hidden reason for choosing that number. It's 999 in the UK. There's a Rancid song that says dial 999 if you want the truth. And obviously that's an inversion. So why wouldn't we have the same thing, either 999 or just the repeating number? You'd think they'd go with 333. So they were priming the pump. They were priming people. It said that the first call was made in February 16th, 1968. So you say, oh, well, yeah, that's wonderful. So what? Well, that's just to start. What year were the towers erected? Okay. The original World Trade Center, because now we have this monstrosity, this crazy site. This is very important. It was the guy called, an architect called Minoru Yamasaki, and they chose this Japanese architect for a reason. He did a bunch of other things, and I don't know if I have time to go into the whole reason why, but they basically used this guy as a front, and he built these, or he constructed these, how can I phrase this? He constructed these in such a way or in such a manner to where they would serve the purpose for which they were to be constructed. And we'll get to that later. So that's who the guy was. He was actually a famous architect. And look into some of the other things that he built. And they opened in 1973. So the first 911 calls that went into existence were in 1968. And then the World Trade Center opened in 1973, and then they collapsed in 2001. Stanley Kubrick does the movie 2001, which has nothing to do with 2001. 2001 is never referenced in the movie. It has nothing to do with anything in the movie. He releases Eyes Wide Shut just before then, and he's one of these people in a long line of Hollywood directors and auteurs who are going to start some people will say predictively programming, or some people will go so far as to be generous and say we're giving a warning. I mean, I guess you could take it either way. If you were very alert and you were looking for this kind of thing, I think it kind of worked like this. This is where the psychodrama of it comes in. And here's where I go off on a little tangent. If you were into numerology, and nothing like this had ever happened before, because it was an historic event where three buildings supposedly collapsed on the same day due to structural failure fire. If you were the most open-minded person in the world leading up to this event, and you were very perceptive, and you were watching all these different movies and TV shows, and because they featured these stupid towers in every single in comic books, in movies, in cartoons, because as it started to get closer to the day, they started to be in more blatant storylines that had to do with, you know, terrorist attacks and things like that. But they were in stuff like Godspell. They were in stuff they popped up in The Wiz, which was the remake of the Wizard of Oz. Sorry, my light just went out, and I got it. I need the light for this one. It goes out every time I start talking. And my power adapter is going out too. Interesting. Very interesting. I never have either one. Well, I have the light problem, but not that. Okay. So, all right. Well, anyway, the movies that they referenced the number and everything from, they did a countdown with the number in Independence Day, and you started to see a trend towards big time disaster movies like showing that. As a matter of fact, I remember, I think it was in high school, I was doing cartoons for the newspaper and for the school paper, and there was a girl that used to do the cartoons with me, and that week we would sort of split up the weeks, and she goes, "Oh, I'm so excited for this new movie, Independence Day, they blow up the White House." And she's all excited because, you know, this was going to be this big movie, and I had not seen any previews for it or anything. I was always, like a cinephile. I was always into the movies and everything. And, we used to talk about, pop culture stuff. And she mentioned that specifically, saying, "Oh, a giant, UFO flies over the thing and, zaps it and blows it up." So in that movie, you have this mass destruction. You have UFOs hovering over skyscrapers, the people getting onto the top, and then the timer on the laptop of Jeff Goldblum's character, where it's frozen on that number 9/11, or it starts there on one of the clips. So, I mean, they're just blatant as it gets closer and closer. And that movie was in the mid-90s, I believe. It might have been the year, I think I had graduated by the time that came out. But as we got closer to, because two things started to happen, and I don't think these were coincidental, and I think these are important for people to understand. This thing, this adapter keeps popping up. This never happens. And I'm not saying it like I'm paranoid. It's just annoying. There's two storylines that started to pop up in movies. There was this idea that the world that we were living in was like this illusory, fake holographic type of a world. David Icke's books started to come out. I have one of them right here. The Global Conspiracy and How to End It. And his books aren't bad. He kind of pads them a little bit. And, he's not a novelist by any stretch of the imagination, but some of his stuff is kind of obvious. But, they're feeding him just enough information. And then I think he actually, I'm going off on a tangent about him. Forget that. The point is that he stuffs his books with some good stuff. He steals other stuff, I think, from my opinion, from Bill's stuff, or he borrows from that, because Bill was talking about it before he was, and then he just, coincidentally started talking about it. So let me rephrase that. But you started to see movies like The Truman Show, The Matrix, and Fight Club, and the movie that I always recommend almost on a weekly basis, the movie Adaptation, I believe came out afterwards in the 2000s. A lot of it, part of this is, it's not all conspiracy. Part of it is that David Fincher, who made Fight Club, this is a little bit of an aside, David Fincher, who made Fight Club, they didn't have technically the ability to do some of the sweeping camera shots that they can do now. They did not have the technology to actually do some of the things that they could to pull off some of the movies that they made. And that's what stopped them from making some of these movies. So it's not all perfect planning and all of this stuff falling together. Some of it is really happenstance, and some of it is just, hey, we can map dinosaurs out and make them look realistic. Let's make a movie about dinosaurs. So there you get Jurassic Park, you know, that year. But they do take advantage when they have the ability to do it to then use it to their advantage. And I saw somebody, there was a guy, well, let me tell you about the piece of artwork and then you'll know what I'm talking about. There's this thing called the sphere or the spherical caryatid. And if you've seen the movie Fight Club, you'll see this golden ball that rolls by. They blow it up. It's part of their Project Mayhem. They have to do destroy a piece of corporate art. And this thing sat in, it was 25 feet high, and it was 52 bronze segments. And it was Fritz Koenig that made it in 1971. And it was the only thing surviving in between on Ground Zero amidst the ruins of 9/11, this sphere. Now, oh my God, the makers of Fight Club, who it was produced by, this was what I was trying to lead into also, so I'll just say it now. Arnon Milchan, an Israeli billionaire businessman and film producer, wink, wink, has been involved in over 130 full-length motion pictures and is the founder of production company Regency Enterprises. Shocking. He, Fight Club producer, I was an Israeli operative. That's an article right underneath. A Hollywood producer behind films like Fight Club, Pretty Woman, 12 Years a Slave, that's three, and the upcoming Noah, which was a movie about the Noahide laws and the United Nations agenda there. A Hollywood producer behind films like Fight Club, Pretty Woman, 12 Years a Slave, and the upcoming Noah has just revealed another interesting line on his resume, Israeli intelligence operative. In an interview with Israeli TV show Uvda, broadcast Monday, Arnon confirmed he once worked for the now-defunct Spy Unit, Bureau of Scientific Relations, assisting in the development of Israel's secret nuclear weapons project. His 2011 unauthorized biography, Confidential, The Life of Secret Agent Turned Hollywood Tycoon Arnon Milchan. Who has a life like that, by the way? I know some people with some pretty incredible lives that were just came from obscurity and did not know anyone. Hand to God, I know that they didn't. I saw the houses that they grew up in. I met their parents. I met their friends. I know for a fact that they came from an impoverished, basically an impoverished background, a lower middle class background, six kids in a 2.5-3 bedroom house, and they became multimillionaires, but nothing like this. Nothing like this. Do you know what it's like to be a 20 something year old kid and his country lets him be James Bond? Wow, the action. That was exciting, Milchan said on air, which begs the question. What I was going to say, when is the movie coming out? So this is just obviously them, you know, throwing it in your face, laughing. And I'm not trying to lay this at the doorstep of any one group. I'm just saying this was a movie that used heavy, what people would call predictive programming. I think it's more than that. I think it's more like a ceremonial, ritualistic type of a thing where, you know, you act it out, you speak it out, you think it out, and then it manifests. But it also works. See, things can have more than one consequence or have more than one outcome. So that's where a lot of people get confused with when they do symbols or they do reasons. Like, especially in the old days of the 9/11 truth thing, people would argue and butt heads over stupid things because they thought it had to be one thing. It had to be thermite because they took the buildings down a certain way. They couldn't wrap their heads around, there could have been a theft. There could have been an insurance plan. There could have been a plot for going to war, a pretext. There could have been multiple reasons that you could kill two birds with one stone. You know, you could have multiple reasons to do this one act. But this thing was thought of, conceived of, planned out, and then executed on the day. They did a run-up to it with the FBI, with the Egyptian guy, when they gave him the hardware. And then he was like, you don't really want me to do this. So that was the first. That's why it's in the rap song, Time to Get Paid, Blow Up Like the World Trade, before it occurs, because the rapper, Biggie Smalls, who I think died before the 9/11 or September the 11th. They see, they get us to actually say it too. Who actually died before that, put that in the song because he was referring to the first World Trade Center bombing. Well, what happened was that, okay, so we get that the Fight Club guy, the producer, wasn't just, you know, this high level, damn it, this adapter thing. It wasn't just that he was, oh, okay, Netanyahu lobbied the U.S. for Fight Club producer. Well, there's a whole thing on him. Maybe you guys will want to look that up. I don't know if I should go too deep down there. You know, L.A. Confidential, that's another one. 12 Years a Slave. The joke on 12 Years a Slave was that they were doing propaganda pieces even back then. Everyone said, oh, that was a book, and that was a real event, and that was a real guy. And that was controversial as a book even in its day. And I believe it was Brad Pitt that was attached to that, and he comes into that movie as a Canadian. He's the only good white person in the movie. Everyone else is, you know, just demonically evil and twisted. And he comes into the movie, has a hand in, you know, creating this movie. And instead of playing one of the, you know, negative portrayals, he makes himself the Christ-like figure in it. He's a carpenter with a beard that's sort of like an Amish-style beard. And he's telling the guy from Alien Covenant and Shame, which is a good movie, Fassbender. He's telling him, oh, you know, the roosters are going to come home. The chickens are going to come home to roost. You know, he's telling them how bad things are going to be if they keep on going the way they're going, which is a warning to contemporary day Americans. Like he all of a sudden is removing himself from the proceedings, and he's so saintly. You know, if you're going to go out and make a movie like that, then you cast yourself as the slave owner. You know, have some balls. That's why one of the YouTube videos I made, one of the first ones I made, was going after Brad Pitt for his comments about socialism. You might be able to still find that if YouTube didn't pull it down. But so I look back at some of those. They're just my early videos on YouTube were kind of cringy. But, you know, we all got to start somewhere. So there was a Japanese architect that built the World Trade Center or designed it, and he designed some other things. Now, in 1941, I believe it was, the Pentagon was they started work on it, and it was on, it was on September the 11th, I believe, that they began construction on it. I thought I had that queued up, the Pentagon. So are you seeing a pattern here? I mean, oh my God. September the 11th, construction on the Pentagon started. Say it isn't so. 60 years to the day before the terrorist attacks of September the 11th from those wicked terrorists, Roosevelt himself had personally approved construction of a new War Department facility at 21st Street in the city's Foggy Bottom neighborhood. I bet. So we got a huge occult ritual taking place. It says right here, as just a little fun fact, the floor area was 6,000,000 this thing keeps popping up, that's right, 6,636,360 square feet. What an interesting number. Not 6,637 or 630, it's all 636. It's 6,636,360. I'm not passing code, I'm reading it. So that's the Pentagon. And of all the cameras that are in the area, without rehashing the whole loose change thing, we got two frames of what looked like a Tomahawk missile crashing in, slamming into the side. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. And the fact that everybody fell for it, I'm going to say that not only did they, I believe it wasn't that people hadn't seen, subliminally seen all of, because let's go back a little bit further. Alex Jones and William Cooper, I don't think everybody had a ham radio, and I don't believe everybody was listening to Hour of the Time back in, 2000 leading up to the attacks. But William Cooper did that one, famous broadcast now, where he said, whatever they're going to blame on Osama bin Laden, don't you believe it. And, how ridiculous it was. Then Alex Jones said where the attacks were going to take place, which I'm surprised he doesn't try to remind people of more often. So maybe he has a guilty conscience. I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much. I told you that he's part of a group called, or he's connected to a group called the Disinformation Network, which is supposed to be like an ironic thing. He is basically that comedian Bill Hicks. He's basically, the difference between him and Bill Hicks is Bill Hicks was this very cynical, almost so far to the left cynical, that Alex Jones is like a splash of Bill Hicks, but mixed with that William Cooper pro-constitutional positive spin of like, hey, we can do this, and we just have to come together and we can come in for the big win and beat the New World Order. So you just take a splash of Bill Hicks, put it into a blender with William Cooper, and out pops Alex Jones with the whole positive spin on, because Bill Hicks was just so cynical. And then he was also the first cyber shaman. He even said, I'm not a comedian. I fooled everyone. I'm actually a shaman. And he was doing the Joe Rogan thing about the whole evolved ape thing. And I don't want to go too far off into that, but I think I've talked about that before, that theory that, apes took some ayahuasca or something, or were injecting DMT and they got smart. Which is kind of like the 2001 idea, that there was some sort of intervention with monkey men and they got real smart and became people. It's all BS though. Okay, let me get back to this other part. So what were they doing? They were doing two storylines. That's how far off on a tangent I went. They were doing two kinds of storylines leading up to the late 1990s. Truman Show. These were Gnostic kinds of allegories, and I think they like those. No Country for Old Men, Cormac McCarthy, that made The Road, No Country for Old Men. He made a trilogy of books that were all took place around the border. And one was supposed to be a love letter to his son. One was supposed to be about his father, No Country for Old Men, and, post-modernity and, how there was no good and no bad anymore, and everything was just, it was crazy how the sheriff didn't carry a gun in the old days. And there's this whole little spiel Tommy Lee Jones gives at the beginning of the movie that sums up the whole movie. In fact, if you're very perceptive, a lot of times they'll sum up the whole movie at the beginning, just like an essay. You know, they'll do a thesis statement, and then they'll say, I'm going to go out and attempt to prove this throughout with supporting material throughout the rest of this paper. That's usually what every movie does. It tells you, it shows its hand at the beginning. And they like to use that three-person narrative where they have the old guy, the modern guy, and then the new guy, the man of the future. And, you know, you've seen this with Kirk, Spock, and Bones. And you've seen it with in Jaws with Quint, Brody, and Hooper. And you've seen it with just think of another movie where there's three dudes. Okay, so they had those movies like The Matrix that would question reality. They put 9/11 on his passport in there. September the 11th is when the expiration date was, which is not very subtle, but they pushed it upside down. They did another movie, Dark City. They did Dark City, and I guess that was Bill calling. I hope you guys can hear me. You know what? Anything I miss, I'll cover next week. I had a crazy day today. My son ran out of the house and decided to go for a run around the neighborhood. Okay, well, that wasn't distracting anything. Then they started to do these kinds of predictive programming movies. And what the whole upshot of the whole thing, what the whole metaphysical part of it was, the real esoteric part of what 9/11 is all about. The one tower that had the antenna on the top, that one was the male tower. And the other one was the female tower, or the feminine and the masculine. It's not really male-female. It's more like masculine-feminine. And then what they do is they combine the two, and they create the one. And that's what the whole ritual is that they're playing out they have to do it on a certain day, and they have to do it a certain way. And what it is it's the two hemispheres of the brain. It's that then become the neocortex. That's where you get the character Neo from. And that's why they showed those movies leading up to that. But, of course, they're not going to explain that. They're not going to show you that that's what it's about. The Back to the Future movies, Donnie Darko. Donnie Darko is a companion piece to Back to the Future. It specifically references Back to the Future in the movie. It says, he says that he liked the way the movie, when he's talking to his science teacher, he says, I like the way they did that movie. It was very futuristic, and that's where he gets the idea of how to time travel. He says, you can have a metal craft of any kind, just like then. And you get this idea of like this tangent, you know, this adaptive thing just keeps popping up. It's plugged in. I don't understand why it's doing that. So every time something like that happens, it throws me off. Okay, so as a companion piece to Back to the Future. So people who, you have to remember, the internet was totally different then too, which a lot of people probably remember, but I'm constantly surprised every day, because it's been so long, at how many years have passed, that there's people that are, you know, 18 years old that weren't even born, you know, they were just born when this happened. So there's a whole generation now, like Yuri Bezmenov said, that, you know, they just needed a couple generations away from certain events to indoctrinate and demoralize the new generation. So that's why we kind of have to go back over this stuff. And when people don't really understand it for what it was when it occurred, then we really have to go back and get the point across of what happened on that day. So what they did was they used it as this on the superficial level. They used it as the pretext to go hit some targets in Afghanistan and invade Iraq, which everyone said was crazy. That's the superficial surface level thing. And everyone said, oh, we're fighting wars for oil and that sort of thing. And everyone rallied around George W. Bush. And really, it was basically like if you ever went to school and you made a diorama, it always reminded me of this. It was like a large scale diorama. It was like a giant, I hate to use the word ritual, but you know, that's what it was. It was this giant thing that takes place when, if you see the, so you have to approach this properly. If you see the tarot cards for the Fool or the Tower, and you see the people falling out and the lightning striking it, it's telling basically the same story. In the movie Back to the Future, like I said, Donnie Darko is the companion piece to that. I saw people saying, thank you, Robert Zemeckis, for making this movie, like he was trying to warn people. Well, basically, what they did with that movie was, in the second one, they showed the guy upside down with the Statue of Liberty and the perspective with the window where it had the video playing on the window. They showed the Trade Center. So they showed that they were doing the same sort of thing. And later on, he revisited that when he made a movie. And this might be confusing to people why he would do this. But what he did was he made a movie way, way after 9/11, just recently, about the guy who put the tightrope in between the two towers and was walking on them. Now, that guy and that, in quotes, that art group, Gelatin, this thing keeps popping up, that art group or wherever they were called Gelatin, both of those were just covers for people to, I'm going to look it up right now. They flew a helicopter on there to do, well, first of all, that group was doing sex magic stuff. I never saw that whole documentary, but I saw the previews, and then they disappeared. And they wrote this book about what had gone on. You know, like a couple of them did come back onto the radar. And what happened was that they used this stupid, it was like a modern art piece where they stayed inside the building and they set up a balcony. They took one of the windows out and people would just walk out and stand there for like a second. And then somebody in a helicopter would take pictures. Now, how the hell is that art? And how much more obvious would it have to be that what they were trying to do was they were trying to have people up there and under the guise of an art piece, you know, they were trying to make an excuse for why they would need a helicopter to measure whatever they were doing or to distract off of, you know, whatever they were doing. Most of those buildings were empty. Like I said, look into the architect that built them, the date and the date on the Pentagon of its construction. This country, what it basically boils down to is, without disheartening anybody, I mean, I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just trying to get down to the nitty gritty, is it's run at the highest levels by people who really believe in this kind of hardcore occultism. I mean, that's why we have the Pentagon. That's why they do these things on this date. To them, they take this stuff super serious. And they obviously have either seen or experienced stuff that has led them to believe that this works and that they need to do things like this and they have to channel. Sorry, it just, whenever it pops up, it covers the whole screen. They do this, they don't do it for fun. And, you know, I've talked to enough people back when I was doing my show on interviews to where, you know, they used to say, well, you might not believe it, but they believe it. And if they believe it, it'll affect you. But when I would ask them, you know, how serious about this stuff are they? You know, they're all about this. They're all about ordering these grimoires, these ancient books that have to be kept in cases and can't leave the library. So they would actually conduct these rituals in the library. This happened at the Presidio. They would do the whole thing with the blooding and of the circle with the pentagram, and they would blood the circle and they would all cut themselves. And the thing that was so disconcerting about all of it was that it was people in the military. So, you know, people who are trained to fight, people who are supposed to be trained to protect, people who, you know, you would think got in there for professional reasons. And they take this stuff super serious, and it gets very, very, very dark. And it's led us into wars that were basically, you know, gigantic eugenics experiments. People don't really realize, because that word got thrown around by Alex Jones, and, you know, because he made that movie, even though a lot of the stuff he said in that documentary that he made, I forget, Endgame, is pretty accurate. He didn't even scratch the surface of how obsessive they were with dysgenics and eugenics and playing around with the population and interbreeding and race. And there's a book called The Fruit of the Family Tree, where they had counted the number of times that a certain fold in this lip had appeared, and they called it the Habsburg lip, and it had been like 200 generations. So, like, they're obsessed with their occultism. They're obsessed with their racial, it's a religion of racialism, and they're obsessed with their magic and their, and they're not playing games. So when something like this happens and they blow us up, okay, I might have to mute up for a second and I'll be right back. Sorry, I'm having difficulties. I hope you're finding this informative at the very least. Okay, sorry. But where I left off was that this is serious business, and it's now historical, and it's obviously deeply affected, whether you had relatives or whatever, friends, whoever. You know, I'm not trying to minimize it. I'm saying that it affected everybody. And when I interviewed Fritz Springmeier, a lot of people know Fritz Springmeier's work with the trauma-based mind control stuff. Well, he also talked about big events that create trauma, whether it's an assassination of a president, whether you like the guy or not. It's a traumatic thing that affects everyone. This was one of those. But this is even on another level, because what it was doing was it was mirroring a hidden process inside of the body that takes place when these ceremonies are performed in a ritual setting. So it was like a giant mock-up of that event, and then with all the people focusing on it and all the people thinking that this is a holographic universe and the planes are holographic. I'm not saying that they weren't. What I'm saying is that this was all primed and set just like a hypnotist anchors things, or someone using NLP, like a politician, like Obama used NLP in his speech, and he's anchoring ideas into your head. It was all primed, the whole thing, from the narrative to the, they're always doing an end of the world thing. A buddy of mine, Lennon, that used to make conspiracy videos, I don't even want to say his whole name anymore because he doesn't seem to do those kinds of things anymore. He used to do media manipulation. I don't know if he pulled down all those videos, but he used to say, okay, it's coming back around to that time of September where you're going to start to see stories about planes. You're going to start to see stories about that mention terrorism. You're going to start to see stories that start to anchor these things in the mind. And this is on the very superficial level. I really didn't get into the actual metaphysics of it. I tried to get a little bit of the history, a little bit of the behind the scenes, what a lot of the people would call the pre-programming. I was trying to recontextualize it. But, you know, today is the actual anniversary. So to be kind of snarky about it or to be sarcastic in any kind of way is not really appropriate, because, you know, this did actually take place. At least I remember, because I've heard somebody who said, what difference does it make to me? I don't live in New York City. And, you know, that's something for everyone to just think about. You know, we live in this gigantic country. I don't know if anybody's traveled around the United States or, you know, been up and down the East Coast, or, you know, it's so diverse, and you could literally spend your life going back and forth, up and down, across, and you would see mountains, deserts, lakes, Great Lakes, Grand Canyons, you could see every kind of terrain. If you went up to Alaska, but even just in the lower 48 with the Mandela effect, it might be a different number now. But, you know, this country's so gigantic, it's so diverse. We have different languages, we have different dialects, we have different customs, we have different traditions. And some people feel so cloistered where they live that they don't even feel affected. In fact, this needs to be said, because this is Steve Pachanik. I'll do it this way. Steve Pachanik is doing open mic poetry readings, and one of the poems he read at his open mic was the Honorable Gaijin. And I thought he was going to go in this direction. I was shocked that he did, but he did. And he talked about, it's a 2-minute poem. He gets up and he's at the open mic, and I think it was in California, because he's usually in, I think in my area, I think he lives in my area, which is not a secret. He tells people where he lives. But he gets up there and he decides, now he was the co-writer with Clancy, Tom Clancy, and he was the inspiration for that. So he gets up at this open mic and he reads this poem about World War II, and it gets into the atomic bombs. And it's almost like a joke poem at first. It almost sounds like the Jack Burns poem that he reads to his mother when he calls the cancer a relentless rebel force that attacked her. And I will see you nevermore, nevermore. And it comes off as comical, but it's supposed to be somber and solemn. So he's reading this thing, and I'm thinking to myself, is he really saying what I think he's saying? Is he talking about the upshot of the poem is that what we did was not honorable, but those bombs, that attack on the Hiroshima and Nagasaki had such a little effect. Everyone thinks that ended the war with Japan. What that did was, that would have been like if we were fighting over in Germany and they hit the World Trade Center. Would that have anything to do with our guys over there fighting? Well, that's basically the effect that it had there. It killed a huge civilian population. So he was saying how that was not honorable. And when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, they made sure to only hit military targets. They purposely avoided bombing civilian targets. So he was saying that, Pechenik in his poem was saying that we acted like what we did was the honorable thing, the necessary evil that had to be done, but it wasn't. And that maybe things weren't what they appeared, and that maybe who we perceive won that side of the war really wasn't the one who won that side of the war. But that's a whole other topic. And but I think it's interesting for everyone to know that, Steve Pechenik feels comfortable enough to go to open mics, and, you know, he's writing beat poetry. So that should tell you the state of affairs that America's in. He feels good enough to be doing that. I guess things can't be so bad. But, I keep getting calls from Bill, so I don't know. I guess maybe something. Sorry, guys. It's been a crazy day. I don't know if I should end this early or not. Okay, I got 5 minutes. I'll just write it out. Unless there's something I'm not aware of that's not being recorded, or something is not coming through, or now I'm all like, I'm completely frazzled. All right, we did the historical. I told you the personal, where I was at. I tried to put it into some kind of a context. I touched on a little bit of the esoteric. I didn't get into the metaphysical of what it would actually mean. All right, well, some of the theories are that, you know, this was a fractal type of a deal, and that what it did was it created an alternative, like a tangent, kind of like what they put forward in the Donnie Darko thing, or that on a metaphysical level, that some people have said that September 11th was the birthday of Jesus. Some people have said that it was tied into some Mayan prophecies and those sort of things. I don't know if I can get into the whole metaphysical aspects of it with 4 minutes left. And like I said, I don't know if it would be appropriate to on the day. I wanted to just do a retrospective and hit all the high points of how They basically bludgeoned everyone over the head since they erected these towers. This is the upshot of the whole thing. What they did was they built these things. They purposely got this architect. When you find out all the things that he built, you find out why they used him to build it, it will make more sense of where I was going with it. They built them for a reason, and the reason was to bring them down, and it was to bring them down on a specific date. And in the meantime, in between, there was a hell of a lot of signaling and telling. And as it drew closer and closer to the date, they started to get more and more blatant. But they added a narrative to it that wasn't about war, that wasn't about just, you know, like invading other countries and, hey, we're going to do a false flag to where, oh, we have to go out and fight other people. It was much broader and deeper than that. That's where I'm trying to go with this. That's what I'm trying to explain. They were trying to tell you a story that's way deeper and bigger than I think anyone grasped on the day, leading up to the day, because we had people. Alex Jones was one of them who said, they're, you know, call the White House. In fact, it was when he was on cable access, and he said, call the White House and beg them to call this off and not do this, which I think is just unreal. It was Pechenik, that's why I've mentioned him, who came on the show, I think, right after that to say, yeah, this is a bunch of BS. They did this. It was William Cooper who said that Osama bin Laden, that was a joke. And he said it, you know, beforehand. And so you had people who were in the know just before. You had warnings. You had storylines being created. You had supervillains being created. Cobra Commander style hideouts that were constructed for these people, like Osama bin Laden's mobile. What did he have? The kidney thing. His mobile dialysis wagon. And, you know, you had this ridiculous stuff. So it started to go from the insane to the ludicrous. You know, it went just all over the map. But I think what got lost in all of there was the actual magical working of what they were trying to do. But one thing is for sure, what came out of it, okay. I don't know if you guys heard that. Okay. Well, what came out of it was it spawned the truth movement, and it spawned what we have today, which is what I consider a now defunct truth movement, but it spawned the alternative media.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
And they have the privilege. So we'll talk about it next week. I hope that was still a minute. Good night. Thank you.